welcome to the Toffee Blues, your source for all things Everton. Welcome to the End of the World podcast. We're still here, still ongoing. Everton might not be playing, but Toffee Blues are still bringing you content, bringing you things to listen to take your mind off the... taking your mind off the you-know-what, let's be honest. No matches to talk about over the weekend. This is recording on Monday. We should be playing the Merseyside Derby right now, but thankfully we're not. Came at the right time for us, just for our, you know, I'm actually less stressed now with a global pandemic than I am with the idea of playing a derby where Liverpool could win the title. So
I think we can all second that as Everton fans.
Yeah, we must be the only people who were actually happy to hear the football called off for now. I don't think I'll be happy next week, but just this one would have been fine. We've got a bit of a different show lined up for you guys today. Obviously no extra time today, but no match to speak of. So we're going to go with a couple of different segments. First segment will be the goalkeeper position. Do we need a new number two in the summer, providing that we are allowed to buy players in the summer? At the minute, that seems to still be the idea. Then we're going to do a bit of a throwback segment. We're going to do a few of these going forward, where we have players of Everton past, some of them far in the past, some of them more recent. We will look back at their career at Everton, what we felt when they signed, what we felt of them when they left, and did they fulfil their potential at Everton, and what our general thoughts are. And this first edition will be for Gerard Dalfayan. He's magic, you know. So before we get into all that, James, how are you, mate? How's it going? How's life in your bunker?
It's fantastic. I mean, I still have to go outside. I've just come in from work about half an hour ago, so life's still pretty much trucking on for me. Not so much for anyone else. I've come home, everyone else is already in. You know, everyone's sort of avoiding going out if they possibly can, but it's not going to be the case for me for a couple of weeks yet, I don't think. So, how about yourself?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm carrying on as normal. I've got the type of job where I can't really work from home, so I'm just carrying on as normal until told otherwise. My Mrs. McAllister works for the NHS as well, so she's actually, contrary to what everyone else is saying, hasn't had much change in her job as of yet, but obviously that can change any day with, you know, the daily updates from the Prime Minister and what have you. So far, so good. How about yourself? Is your job the type of job where you can work from home? Is that a possibility?
No, not really, no. I do facilities management, so we have to be on site all the time. If people are in the office block, then we're in, basically. So until the entire building decides that they fancy staying off, then we've got to go into work.
Yeah, it's pretty much my position as well. I mean, you know, heart goes out to anyone who's in an industry that's going to suffer unduly, like at the service industry or at restaurants, you know, anything like that. You know, good luck to everyone, and hope everyone pulls through together. But I'm sure anyone listening to this now is fed up of listening to talk about the coronavirus. It seems to be what everyone's talking about. So let's just kick things off straight away. I mean, what would you say is the best type of biscuit?
Yeah, that's a fantastic start.
Toffee Blues John said that's what, you know, we said, what can we open the show with? You know, that isn't the coronavirus. And even though we have just done 5 minutes on it, he just said, what's the best type of biscuit? Everyone loves that. So I'm just going to throw me marker down straight away and say chocolatey rounds. You get them in a biscuit selection boxes, but they're basically those round biscuits with a hole in, very small hole, and they're absolutely covered in a bunker thick layer of chocolate. It's unbelievable. I think that's a strong opening shot. What about you?
Very interesting. I mean, I'm very apprehensive about telling everyone my favourite biscuit, just because in this age of sort of stockpiling, that they're all gone by the time I go to the shop next time. But my favourite has to be a custard cream. Very basic. You just can't argue with it, though. I think a cup of tea or a cup of coffee with a custard cream, you just cannot go wrong.
Got to be honest, that's a pretty rough one. That's like, you'd be fine on rations. That's not even like a treat, a custard cream. I mean, it's versatile. I'll give you that. It's a good, solid Tony Ibbett biscuit where, you know, he does his job and no frills about him. But I'm looking for more flair in a biscuit.
What kind of biscuit are you looking for? The Neymar of biscuits.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, biscuits aside, there's a few other little things, you know, going on at the minute outside of the dreaded CV. Everton related as well, imagine that. We've been obviously linked quite heavily to the Brazilian centre back from Lille, Gabriel, I don't know how you say it, Gabriel, I'm going to assume. A lot of reports from a while ago, actually, that it went round the sort of ITK, you know, sort of hive mind on Twitter that a while ago that he was already signed and sealed and delivered or close to. And now the press are starting to pick it up, you know, could be a player coming into the squad for next season, providing the season, you know, goes ahead as planned. I mean, I've not seen anything of him, but, you know, he looks like, you know, physically he looks like quite a big, you know, strong player. So I'm all for that, because I think, you know, pace and power is a big thing for centre-back. We've got Mason Holgate, who's one of our best players at the minute, but he's, you know, he's quite short for a centre-back, but he's got the ability on the ball, so perhaps could, you know, strike a good partnership with him. Have you seen anything of Gabriel?
Left-footed as well, isn't he? Which is I think that's something we've really been concerning me lately, is like, not since Sylvain Distan have we really had a left-footed centre-back. Well, we have Funes Mori, but we'll gloss over that.
We had for one game, we had Eloquent Mangala.
Oh, yeah.
Then again, he was a had all the physical attributes and he wasn't any better for it, so I don't think I can really take that as a good sign. But
it's not a guarantee, is it?
No, but, you know, it's nice to see some Everton news that isn't, you know, like, you know, oh, we're missing the games, or, oh, you know, so on and so forth. Nice to be linked to players and almost like nothing's going on. Also, as well, the Daily Mail came out with a story saying that USM or one of the affiliates, they didn't say USM, they said Alishmet Usmanov, and I assume that'll mean USM or one of his associated companies, are set to be the stadium name and rights partner for $200 million over 10 years, which, you know, be pretty good. I mean, to the surprise of absolutely no one, he's, you know, he's involved in all things Everton at the minute, and he paid the tidy sum of £30 million just for the first refusal. So I don't think anyone expected, even if it's not true, I don't think anyone expects a left field sort of company to come in and name the stadium. I think it will be an Usmanov type company. What did you make of that?
I thought it was a pretty, like you say, I think it's pretty uplifting, given that everything's a bit melodramatic at the moment. I'm intrigued, to be honest, because I'm not too sure. There might be a few other stadiums with naming rights. What is 20 million a season set against the scale of other clubs and their naming rights deals? Is that a good deal?
You know what? I actually don't know, to be honest. That's probably something for the Business Matters podcast to touch on.
It certainly is. I think obviously we're seeing this and, like, you're totting it up and it's sort of coming to, oh, 20 million a season, get in, got 20 million more. This is like, it's obviously 20 million more than we're already getting. So, of course, yeah, it's a good step up. But is it like good for a stadium name and rights deal? I'm not actually sure what. You know, obviously, you've got places, a lot of the ones in America have sort of companies sponsoring them, like, you know, like Hard Rock Stadium, things like that. Yeah. How much do you reckon they're paying?
Yeah, true. I mean, I can't imagine it being below a low rate, considering, you know, it's a new stadium and, you know, our shall we say, closeness to the person involved.
Yeah.
I can't see it being under market value. I can see it actually being over market value, considering we're going to get a mates rate, let's be honest. But it's just the way it's going. Now, eventually, the top stadiums in the country, none of them will have you know, old school names. There won't be a Goodison Park or anything like that. There's no Highbury, it's the Emirates, it's not Main Road, it's the Etihad, and we'll be the USM. And it's just part and parcel of football. If it helps your team to be competitive, then why not?
I mean, have to do it, yeah.
I remember a long time ago the very idea of of stadiums not having their own names was quite, you know...
Alien, quite, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was quite unpopular. It sort of changed overnight that the public opinion on that wasn't like... People were dead against it, whereas now it's no one really, you know, thinks anything different. I think it's just the, over time, people have got used to it. I think it'd be a harder sell to rename an existing stadium. So if you tried to make the USM Goodison Park, even though that might be something we worth doing for a few years to generate some money, but I think people would be a little bit more resistant to that than they would be, you know, with the USM.
I think people would be a bit cynical about it as well, like they'd see through it.
Yeah, well, to be honest, it has.
They'll see through it in the new stadium, but I think, like you say, because it's on vogue, if you like, to give naming rights to a new stadium, maybe people won't look into it as much.
Yeah, I mean, people will call it Bramley Moor because it's been in people's conscience for a while now as Bramley Moor.
The Bramley Moor, yeah.
Yeah, so it's not like a stadium which. No one, you know, if it was just called the new stadium and no one, you know,
the new stadium.
Yeah, well, if it was at
Stonebridge,
if it was there, then it might not have a name synonymous with it. Like no one would be calling it Stonebridge Cross; they'd just be calling it the new stadium, like until it got a name. Whereas because this is on a dock and it's got its own specific, you know, like it already exists or something. Whereas Stonebridge Cross, while it has got a name, it's just a plot of land. Bramley Moor Dock is a dock. And it's, you know, it's amongst the other docks. So I just think it'll get referred to as the Dock Stadium or Bramley Moor Dock and eventually the USM. But it's like the same way City have got Eastlands as well as the Etihad, you know what I mean?
Yeah, Eastlands. That, I mean, again, that's a bit of a vague name. That's like us calling it Crocky.
Well, yeah. Well, it was originally the City of Manchester Stadium, wasn't it?
But it was because it was run by the council, wasn't it?
Yeah. So
the council put their name on it.
Well, it was nearly us, wasn't it? In a way, after a fashion. Anyway, let's move on with the show. We've waffled enough. So, first segment is Jordan Pickford or number two goalkeeper, to be more specific. Like, do we need another number two goalkeeper in the summer to put pressure on Jordan Pickford? Obviously, we've got Martin Stecklenberg at the club whose contract expires in the summer. No guarantee that his contract will be extended. He's obviously coming towards the end of his career now. He's at a decent age. Joao Virginia's at the club. He's recently made the bench in the last match. But he definitely needs a loan deal. He was on loan this season but was recalled because basically lack of good playing time. I still think that the best thing for him, and I think the club would probably concur, is to go out and get another loan deal, one where he plays and he cuts his teeth a little bit. We did bring a number two in, obviously, last summer, a new number two to put pressure on Jordan Pickford in Jonas Lersel, but for whatever reason, it hasn't seemed to have panned out so far for Lersel. He came into the squad, he was playing a little bit in pre-season, and then he hasn't played a competitive game for the club in any, even in the cup competitions, anything like that. And even though Pickford's had some ropey form in the last, several months, certain games where he's come under a lot of like criticism from supporters and the media, Lersel didn't seem to be, anywhere near, displacing him or even getting a game ahead of him. And obviously the managerial position changing hasn't really helped him in that regard, but he's gone back out on loan to Huddersfield to get some games, with the idea basically being at that time that, he needs to go to have a chance of going to the Euros. Obviously, situations change a lot with that now. But what do you think? I mean, what would you do about this goalkeeper position in the summer? Be it the number two, or even if it's, do we buy a new number one and let Jordan Pickford fight it out and be the number two? Like, what's your thoughts on it?
It's a very interesting dilemma, I think, because I'm not sure if you've been reading the general football news, but I think one of the bosses of Huddersfield said that they most likely won't be making Lossell's loan permanent, so he could be back in the first team squad next season, even if he is a number three, even. So it's a very interesting. I think Stecklenberg's gone this summer. I think, like I say, Virginia's got to go on loan. Whether Lossell's here or not, I do think we need another goalkeeper. the question for me is it a, is he going to upstage Pickford, or is he going to just be another bench warmer? What would you go with? Obviously, Pickford's form's very divisive, I'd say, at the moment, but some people are sticking by him and some have written him off. What sort of side of the fence you're on?
I'd like a new first-choice goalkeeper in my ideal world. I don't think Pickford's anywhere near good enough at the minute. I think he's been poor for pretty much the whole season, with, you know, flashes of the odd, you know, the odd good performance littered amongst a bad season. I don't think it will happen. I don't think I want it to happen. I think it should happen, but will it? I doubt it. I don't think Pickford's anywhere near danger of being replaced. Because a lot of money's been invested in him. He's a young player. His stock's low at the minute, so it's not as if anyone's going to come in and buy him. I mean, you never know, but I'd be surprised. It depends who's available. Like, you know, goalkeeper's one of the hardest positions to, you know, to buy for at the minute, because, you know, how many top goalkeepers are there around? There's only a couple, and even the top ones, you know, make mistakes. But this season, I mean, I don't know if you saw. I don't know the first thing about XG, but did you see that XG graph that was on Twitter about Pickford?
I haven't seen it, to be honest. But
hey, long story short, he was the most underperforming keeper of the entire league. You know, the shots he faced, to how many went in, and so on. He's having a really poor season, and you know, I can't pronounce his name. The goalkeeper from Lazio, we've been tentatively linked with him in the press, but I just don't think, with other positions in the squad that need, you know, money investing in it and attention and, you know, paid to it, central midfield, right wing, right back, I don't see goalkeeper being high on the list of priorities for the manager or Marcel Brands, because it's money's tight, the financial fair play is tight, so I think we will probably bring in a number two keeper, possibly even a free transfer. And I know there's a couple, you know, you've spoke about off camera, which I'm going to ask you about now, of potential number two goalkeepers who could come in on a free transfer or a low fee to put pressure on Pickford, because it has happened before. I remember Nigel Martin coming when
He was only supposed to be a backup for Richard Wright, and he upstaged him.
Yeah, he was. Richard Wright was bought by David Moyes.
And actually, it's funny you should say that, because I'm comparing Pickford to Richard Wright a lot lately.
Yeah, well,
I think he's a very good shot stop. Like you say, he has the odd brilliant game, but he's full of errors.
Well, yeah. And then Nigel Martin came in as like an experienced understudy and got his chance and then never let go of it, because he was such a superior player to him. So there's always a chance that happened. But have you got any... like, what names would you like to see brought in?
I think it's very interesting that you say that, because I was suggesting maybe an out-of-contract, world-class keeper who's maybe past his best but still better than Pickford. I'm not sure what there is out there at the moment. I'm not sure, obviously. There's a couple I can think of. Maybe Serie A, obviously. It's a bit far-fetched, but I don't... and he's probably in his 40s now, but Buffon's still probably an upgrade on frigging Pickford. And obviously, he's worked under Ancelotti as well. I think it was Ancelotti who brought him to Juventus in the first place. So, obviously, he's probably still got, you know, a close tie there. But there's probably a few others. I'm not sure how old Handanovic. I know he's still very well-rated at Inter, isn't he?
Yeah, but who was the... And I think I know who it was, but I don't think you said the name of the first one.
Which one?
The first one you were talking about, the Juventus one. You didn't say the name, I don't think.
Gigi Buffon.
Yeah, I knew it was, but I thought, if anyone who doesn't know who you're talking about, let's just say the name. I mean, imagine Buffon. I mean, I don't care how old he is, I'd have him all day.
That's what I mean, but that was the thing. Nigel Martin, in his prime, was a world-class keeper. It doesn't matter how old you are. I think as a goalkeeper, you don't really lose it, unless you start gaining weight like Neville Southall does.
Yeah.
You don't really... I don't think you lose it that badly.
I mean... that'd be brilliant, but I mean, other people have said that we weren't the first ones to recommend it. But Ben Foster is out of contract at Watford at the end of the season. I think he'd be a decent shout to come in and understudy Pickford, and well, not understudy him so much as mentor him, because he's got the experience of his career. He's been an England player himself. But I don't know. I think we're getting to the point soon where Pickford's probably only got a make or break season next season for him. And then
he has to be replaced properly.
He has to be replaced, or, you know, I know he signed a new deal recently, but I think, you know, the manager, if he has another season next season like he's had this year, I can't see Ancelotti, you know, sticking with him. I think he'll look to bring in a new younger keeper. A new fresher keeper. Because the squad, when Pickford's on song, he can be one of our best players. He can earn us points with the saves he can make in a game, but he can also cost us points with the silly mistakes he makes. Now, you know, he would say, well, I correct those mistakes straight after. But it's like, we don't want that erratic form from a keeper. And we don't want to, I personally don't want a keeper who responds to criticism by, you know, like, you know, basically saying, I shouldn't be criticised. Like, you can, he responds so bullishly to criticism and not in a sort of,
I need to do better kind of way. It's more
he
of
sort
a,
of feels
how
like,
dare you criticise me?
Yeah, he doesn't seem to take it on board. He still makes the mistakes and, you know.
As you think is, he needs a bit of his ego knocking out of him.
Yeah, I mean, it might come with experience, but who knows? He's still a quality keeper based on ability. And when you look at the, you know, there's not a wealth of top keepers around. So you think, well, you might go out and replace him and get someone who's not as good as him. And that is a risk. But I'd like to see more from Pickford. But I think a better number two, a genuine threat to him,
might
be the ticket.
The rocket up his backside that he needs, maybe.
Yeah, when he makes a mistake, he thinks, I might not play next week. I think that would do him the world of good, because at the minute, there's no danger.
No one's troubling him.
His head would have to be half hanging off for him not to play at this point. But yeah, I think the club needs to address that. But they'll address it by bringing in a number two and not a number one, I think, at this stage.
Yeah, I think Foster's a good suggestion that I think you came up with, but is there anyone else you can think of across Europe? I'm just going to actually, while we're on here, I might just pop online and just have a little look to see if who's going on a free.
Well, I'm sure the Napoli keeper will get linked with us at some point, because let's be honest, every single Napoli player has been linked to us.
Who is the Napoli keeper? Ospina.
Is it?
Yeah, well, Yeri Mina goes on the limo with David Ospina, so... Yeah, he's definitely signing for us,
yeah. Yeah, well, there's always a Donnarumma. Not really realistic, but let's be honest, he's a Mino Raiola player, so you never know.
How's he getting on at AC Milan now? Do the fans still hate him after that transfer request, or...?
I don't know. They had, like, banners about him and everything, didn't they? So I can't imagine that.
They were proper kicking off, but now, obviously, maybe it's all settled down. He's clearly still getting a game, so...
Yeah. I mean, maybe we're talking nonsense. When you look around the league, even the top teams, as the our lovable neighbour showed the other day, haven't all got quality second choice keepers. So I think expecting Everton to go out and have two quality keepers might be a bit of a fantasy wish. But I think Ben Foster could be the perfect fit, unless Watford re-sign him, because I can't imagine him wanting to uproot if he's getting an offer, a new deal there. But you know, he's in the last year of his contract, and you know, it would be a step up. It'd be a step up in terms of club size, but it'd be a step backwards in terms of that. At his age, does he want to understudy, or does he want to play as much as he can? I mean,
he's in his mid-30s, isn't he?
Yeah, he's not old as in like he's finished, but he's old as in like he may want to play. He may say, well, I've only got two or three years left, so I want to make sure I'm playing as much as possible. Whereas a young keeper, maybe someone we've not had come up yet, might be, well, you're going to get your chance. Just stick at it.
I'm just having a little look through the list now, see who's about. Another interesting one who's in his mid-30s is actually an ex-Everton understudy of the past, John Ruddy. Do you reckon he's of the level we need, or...?
Probably not. I liked John Ruddy the first time we had him.
He had a belter of a game once. Yeah, I think he played about twice.
Yeah.
Obviously, I think he was back up. Go ahead, what?
That was it, go on.
Yeah, he was back up to the... I think it was that season Nigel Martin got injured and Richard Wright was awful, so he got to go. he was all right. And then obviously we got Tim Howard, so he was the number two to him for a long time. So we never really, I think he only played about twice in his entire like 5 years he was here.
I don't really see him as that, you know, at the level to test Pickford. He'd just be another Stecklenburg game. Someone who's got a long career and, you know, experience, but he's not really going to threaten to, you know, start any games. Whereas Ben Foster, I mean, I thought Lazel would do this because although he'd been at Huddersfield, you know, Huddersfield went down, he was a first choice keeper in the Premier League the season before. So I thought, well, if you bring him in, then he's not going to be out of his depth terrible. He's going to be a Premier League keeper with a different defence in front of him. But obviously it hasn't panned out that way so far for Lazel. It may still do. He may come back and go, right, well, I'm ready now. But I think someone like a Foster, if he'd be willing to, you know, come in as an understudy at first or as a number two, I think he'd be the type of player who, if he did come in, you know, Pickford might have a job getting it back off him, a la Nigel Martin and Richard Wright.
Yeah, well, I'm just having a little look through. There's not many big name goalkeepers who are available for free this summer. The only decent one I can see is Walter Benitez from Nice, but I can't see him leaving, being a first choice in his prime, if you know what I mean. So,
yeah.
Like, how old is he's 27.
Why has he had a contract?
It's interesting you should say that. I'm not actually sure why.
We need Jerry for this information. We're just spouting off dead end like questions. Why is that? Don't know. Where's he? Don't know.
Yeah, it's not ideal. It's just literally that we're doing our research like in the middle of the show. I mean, we should probably be a bit more clued up, but I don't really focus. I don't really watch a lot of football outside of the Premier League these days, so sometimes you just got to think. But yeah, Gianluigi Buffon's out of contract at the age of 42 this summer, in case you're interested, guys.
Oh, I mean, I'd have him as the goalkeeping coach. Never mind the goalkeeper. Just to get him in the club, how good would that be?
Oh, he's just a belter, isn't he? I'd have him in a heartbeat, but in Carlo any capacity.
Carlo can take him to Bootle Strand.
Oh my God, Carlo and Gianluigi Buffon in Bootle Strand is just like...
Get some salt and pepper shumai from the butchers. It's unreal.
Love it.
Right, well, we'll leave it there then. We both agree that we think
Gianluigi Buffon is needed at Everton in any capacity. Yeah,
a new keeper is on the agenda for this summer. Likely to be a number two to replace Stecklenburg and maybe even replace Lazel, depending on how things go with him. We both like Gianluigi Buffon for non-footballing reasons mostly, but but there's also other options like, you know, like Ben Foster on a free, or even, why not? It's on a rumour.
Yeah.
Ring up our mate. Let him just say, do us another favour there.
Mino Fantastico, Mino Magnifico. Segment's going to be called Remember the Name, where we are going to be looking back on the careers of former Everton players. Some maybe more recently, some looking back into the glory years, maybe. Who knows? Hopefully the glory years are coming back pretty soon, but fingers crossed. As for this one, today we're going to be looking into the career of Gerard Deulofeu at Everton, who came obviously with a lot of promise from Barcelona and went on to have two separate spells at Everton. Was generally a popular figure with the fans, but we'll just look into it a bit more, what we thought of Gerard Deulofeu. So, Terry, what did you make of Gerard Deulofeu? What's the sort of reaction you got when he signed?
Well, when he signed, it's like a different lifetime now. Like, obviously, David Moyes had just left. Now, we'd had, like, you know, 10 years, 11 years, David Moyes. And regardless of whatever job you thought he did, like whether you loved him, whether you thought he, you know, gone stale at the end or whatever, what have you, he had been, you know, he'd been here ages and it had been Moyes' way for ages. So when Martinez came in, that transfer window, things were very different. You know, he basically we had no depth under David Moyes. We had a very strong 11, 12, 13 on a push players throughout his entire time. But then we'd fill the bench out with kids and, you know, use them here and there and what have you. And then when Martinez came in, we started buying players that we would never have bought under David Moyes, for better or worse. Turned out to be worse in a lot of cases. But we got started doing deals that weren't outside the box. They weren't like what you would have expected under Moyes. Under Moyes, you'd expect one, maybe two at most players per summer. But they'd be, you know, drag on for weeks on end. And, you know, you'd know they'd be, you know, gone over with a fine-tooth comb. Whereas we, I think, in quick, we had two splurges on transfers. We got, obviously, Alcaraz, Aruna Kone and Gerard Deulofeu. And then, obviously, on the deadline day, we got Gareth Barry, McCarthy and Lukaku. Gerard Deulofeu, other than the Lukaku excitement, obviously, because he was, you know, striker who'd scored goals at West Brom, and he, you know, he was a quality player. But until that very last minute when we got Lukaku, Gerard Deulofeu was the most interesting transfer of that window so far, because, you know, Martinez had bought Kone, who was his striker at Wigan. He brought Alcaraz, who was out of contract, defender at Wigan. You know, raised
Robles as well.
Sorry?
Robles as well.
Bob Les, yeah, I haven't even missed one out. He brought that many. But he brought a lot of, in his first sort of splurge, he brought just ex-Wigan players with him. And, you know, people did raise a few eyebrows, but they were given the benefit of the doubt at the time, you know, because at that time, it's easy to forget that Evertonians weren't as jaded as they are now with transfers, you know, because we've had so many players come and go in the last several years. But back then, you know, there wasn't
just the
that
fact that we were signing players, I think, was a source of excitement.
Yeah, it was. The fact that we were signing players and signing a lot of them, even though they weren't, like, you know, all particularly very strong moves, even on the face of it, it was a big deal. We were like, oh, well, we've signed multiple players, we're adding depth. But Gerard Deulofeu stuck out the most, because obviously the others were from Wigan. And then we got this kid from Barcelona. Yeah, Barcelona B. And it was put in the announcement that he was on loan, and it was a strict no-buy clause loan. It was actually mentioned, like, there is no option to buy, he is coming back. So he was sort of, like, you know, hyped up from that moment, like, oh, this kid's class. He's, you know, he's going to be, you know, not the next Messi, but he's going to be the next Barcelona, you know, like, you know, product of La Masia. And we're going to get him on loan. And they've said in, you know, really, you know, firm language, you're not keeping him. Don't even think about keeping him, which made me think, oh, how good's this player going to be? The Barca aren't even willing to. Because a lot of the time when we'd sign players under Moyes, we'd sign players, and it worked a lot, don't get me wrong, but we'd sign players who'd sort of, like, you know, lost their way a little bit in their careers, like, you know, Pienaar or someone like that.
Arteta was a prime example. Obviously, yeah. he didn't cut it at Barcelona, so he ended up moving on to Rangers, I think, and then to Everton.
Sociedad as well, like, via that. But we basically got, you know, unpolished gems, and, you know, we'd sign them and we'd you know, make them better, and then we'd loan them, then we'd sign them for low fees. And whereas this one was like, there was no view to buy, there was no suggestion that this player is going to be an Everton player long term. It was just, we're just going to lend you this quality young player, and then that's it. And that, to me, actually built the hype in a way, because it made me think, like, what's this kid?
They
got
must
it?
Value this guy a lot.
Yeah, and then, you know, people, plus you'd never heard of him, like, for the kickoff. It wasn't like, you know, oh, we've seen him play a few games and he's not ready for Barca. It was just like, who's this star kid who's going out on loan, and he's going to a Premier League team as his loan, and he's coming back. So then he obviously, you know, he comes into the team and we're playing brilliant. The team's brilliant. It wasn't just, you know, Deulofeu, but the whole team for Martinez's first year. It was probably the best we'd seen Everton play
since Kendall.
Yeah, because we were just quality. You know, everything sort of clicked into place. You know, John Stones and Ross Barkley were starting to establish themselves. The central midfield, you know, Barry and McCarthy was perfect. And we had a top quality goal scorer. So Deulofeu came in, you know, the pressure wasn't all on him. So if we got a player like that now, it'd be like, right, let's see what you can do. I want you to make the difference in this team. And, you know, the pressure might get to him. So Deulofeu came in, but he didn't play every week. He sort of rotated with Kevin Morales. Pienaar tended to stay, keep his place, but Deulofeu and Morales would, you know, sort of come in and out for each other. And, you know, he looked quality. He scored some good goals, like that goal he scored away at Arsenal. We still haven't got a good record away at Arsenal, but even when we went 1-0 down, I felt like when I was watching that match, like, we're still in this. We could still get something. Obviously, he scores that quality goal. And I remember when when that season was over, Guillaume Balaguer, the journalist, did a night at Goodison Park. It was a night dedicated to Spanish football, and you know, Spain had just, you know, won the World Cup not long before and what have you. And I went to it, and just wanted to, you know, and basically Guillaume did this sort of relaxed thing after the questions. He had like Fernando Hierro there, and I can't remember his name. And this will do me head in this now. A journalist from Marca. In Spain, and basically just did a talk about like how far Spanish football's come, what have you. But afterwards, he'd done a Q&A session, but it wasn't like a formal one where you put your hands up. It was like, "I'll go to the bar and I'll just be at the bar." So I started asking him about Gerard Deulofeu. I was like, "Is there any chance he could come back? Like, you know what? Because you know we really want him, and you know he's got a lot of connections at Barcelona." And Guillaume Balaguer was saying, "You know what? I don't think so. I think they see him as, you know, as like the future." But the same way that they're looking at that Fati now, like he's going to be,
very similar, actually.
Like they saw him as like this big thing, and I was like, "Oh, he basically said he's in." You know, he likes it here. Deulofeu, this game, Balaguer saying this, he likes it here. If he were to move, he'd probably come here, but I don't think he will move because, you know, he sees his future at Barcelona, and Barcelona see that. But then, you know, obviously, I'll let you come in now rather than go on to a second spell. But what, like that, he was just an exciting player. He turned heads when he first came in, just from the type of transfer he was. And I can't even. The season was just that good, and he was part of it. I don't even like. You know, what did he set the world alight in his first season? I feel like he did, but I might just be having rose tinted glasses. I feel like he was quality in the first instance. Like, still had his issues. He still had like poor stamina and whatnot. But that was all stuff that, you know, you could train and something that you could, you know, improve on. But what did you think when we signed him? I've gone on at length. So how did you feel?
No, I was the same. I was like very impressed. Obviously, I knew about him, and he was like the superstar of Barca's reserves the year before. And like you say, they had high hopes for him. And then when we got him, I thought, this will raise a few eyebrows here. Mm-hmm. And obviously he did, and he did well. I mean, like I say, it wasn't flawless. I think there was times where he was in and out of the team. But obviously he was a young player. So I think, like you say, because everyone else was performing, we gave them the benefit of the doubt. But yeah, it was an interesting one because obviously then he came back the second time, and we kind of knew what sort of Deulofeu was about. But I thought he was a bit more refined when he came back the second time. I'm not sure about you.
When he came back the second time, there was real excitement for that as well, because he'd gone back to Barcelona and he hadn't really, you know, grasped any chances. You know, like he was on the bench. He plays a bit more than, you know, than he played a bit more than he would eventually when he went back a third time, but like a second time, what have you. But he when he was coming back, it was like, right, well, he's gone back to Barcelona and he hasn't been good enough to get in the Barcelona team, so Everton are going to go back for him. And we just had Martinez's second season where, you know,
we were
great in Europe. So that sort of, you know, it pulled the wool over a lot of supporters' eyes, myself included. I went into Martinez's third season sort of like half excusing the poor league showing because we were so good in Europe, and, you know, because he had been so good the season before, I sort of wanted to believe that the second season was the blip, not the first season. And so I went into the third season thinking, well, we're going to see now which one was the real Roberto Martinez, and you know, we sure did. But there was a wave of excitement going, right, well, we're going to get Deulofeu back, but this time it's for keeps, and we're getting him for low money. You know, he's not being good enough for Barca.
It was very similar to a typical Moyes deal, as we were discussing before.
Yeah, that's what it felt like. It felt like, well, we're going to get this player back. You know, it's if we'd have signed Donovan, it would have been like this, I think.
A bit like that, yeah, or even the way we did with Arteta, I think.
Yeah, well, it was just, there was a wave of excitement, but it was a different wave because it was like, well, we've had a sort of, half and half up and down season last season, but we're going to put it right now. This summer's crucial. And when we were getting Deulofeu back on, yeah, he's not had a good showing at Barca, but he's still a quality young player. He might just need a couple more years to turn it on, and you know, like, he might need a bit of polish. You know, like you've got it in one, like a Moyes player. Like, yeah, his stock's low with his club, but we'll get him, and you know, he'll be better than he ever was. So we had there was a banner, wasn't there? Like, by, I think it was by John and Airport, we welcome Deulofeu. And you know, he put it on his Twitter, and it was like, you know, the buzz, the excitement. You know, like I said before, we've had so many players in and out at the minute that Evertonians now are a little bit burnt about hyping up players when they sign them.
But we were absolutely buzzing when he came back. I remember this.
Yeah, exactly. Like, now, if you sign a player, even if it's a player you know and he's a decent player, you know, you're sort of cautious because, you know, you've had so many new players come in and you've been really excited for them and they haven't panned out, that you sort of think, well, let's see how they do first. It's bred a sort of healthy caution, I suppose, or a healthy, like, patience with new players.
Sandro was the one. I think that turned everyone into cynics.
Yeah, well, you know, for me, it was Davy Klassen. I thought Davy Klassen was going to be a game changer, but he clearly wasn't. But it made me think that you can be so sure on a player and be so excited, and it just doesn't happen. So you best wait and see. But back then, you know, this was a knock-on effect of Moyes' transfer record. Moyes very, very rarely got it wrong. So we expected it.
Yeah. We expected every signing to be, like, tick the box.
Yeah, I can't speak for everyone, but I think as a fan base at that time, we weren't really used to bringing in players at all, but we certainly weren't used to bringing in players and have them just bomb, because it didn't happen that often.
Like, we never got shortchanged. You'll find if Moyes signs a crap player, he probably signed them for about half a million tops.
Yeah, like the proper investments that he made, you know, you can count on your hands how many, over a decade, how many players he brought in that weren't good, that weren't value for money or anything or what have you. So obviously we've become accustomed to it now, but back then it was just like, it was not exactly the same, but it was similar levels of excitement. So when we got Pienaar back, because we knew what we were getting, and he was synonymous with a time where the team was better, because when Pienaar came back, we'd gone crap for a spell. And when he came back, it was like, this is the beginning of us having a little revival. You know, we're going to get Baines and Pienaar back down the left, because we'd had Royston Drenthe and what have you, hadn't we?
McGuigay.
Yeah, and it was like, and this was a similar sort of vibe. You know, like, oh, well, you know, we've had a poor season last season, but we need to kick on in the transfer market now. And if you get Gerard Deulofeu back, but you're going to keep him this time and he's for a cheap price, That's quality. And then obviously after that, you know, what happened with Martinez happened, and Koeman. I don't know why Koeman never stuck with him as a striker, you know. I mean, now, I think if we had Gerard Deulofeu now, he'd play the Richarlison role. He'd play off a striker.
He does it often, doesn't he?
Well, when they play 4-4-2, he often does, like, he'll play off Troy Deeney. I think if we used to play, you know, obviously we didn't have the manager at the time for this, and, you know, never, you know, it's no good thinking about it, but if we used to play to 4-4-2 with Deulofeu off Lukaku, we'd have been a quality team.
Oh, like, yeah.
If we, you know, but that would have needed, and it wouldn't have gone, at this time, it wouldn't have been popular. We'd have had to have dropped Ross Barkley, because he played that role, he played off Lukaku. But I think Deulofeu off Lukaku would have been so much better with, you know, whatever, you know, eventually, whoever we had on the left, I think it was Cleverley at one point, and we probably didn't have the players to do it, but with the fullbacks we had in their prime of Baines and Coleman, we could have had, you know, Ross Barkley on the right of a four or something like that, you know, the, you know, more compact midfielders, but just a wasted opportunity. And he's at Watford now, and he's, you know, he's kicking on. He does look an even better player than he was at Everton, because at Everton, obviously, you know, his faults did come out. He had the lungs of, like, an asthmatic hamster. You know, he'd be blowing out of his ass very early in game.
Half an hour into the game, really.
Yeah, he's still got that, but his quality is improving. He's not, you know, turned into a world beater, but a team with a set style and a consistent, you know, like, run of games. And he's starting to, you know, like, prove he is a Premier League player. I saw, you see on Twitter all the time, a lot of people going, you know, well, if Watford go down, should we get Delafeu again for our right-hand side, like a third time? I mean, why not? But I just don't see it.
I personally, and I mean, I remember that season he came back, he did whip some brilliant crosses in for like some of Lukaku's goals, but I never thought he was a right winger. I always thought he played better either on the left or, like you said, up top.
I mean, I've got a lot of time for Delafeu. I mean, he was an exciting signing the first time, and he was even more exciting the second time. I think he's a quality player, but he came to Everton at the wrong time. He needed Everton to be more stable. I mean, a lot of players could say this, but he needed Everton to be more stable and like, you know, the infrastructure to be more steady for him to thrive. And like, he was in it, he was at a time when he was one of the few good players in like a struggling team, and then he was one of the players who they needed to, you know, he lost his place to Aaron Lennon just because, you know, work rate.
Lennon actually put a graft in.
Yeah, we needed that at the time, and you know, it blew my mind that we were sending our players who couldn't get on our team out on loan to AC Milan. Shows how far they had fallen. But a little spell there, didn't he? But I still think he's a quality player. I mean, he wouldn't suit Everton at this point because, as you say, the only place for him would be right-hand side, and you'd need to be, you know, a tireless hard worker. And we've had two good looks at him now, and that is one thing that he isn't. But I've got a lot of fond memories for Delafeu. He reminds me of a simpler time where I trusted the transfers were going to work out.
Yeah, to be fair, well, he worked out more than most of the Steve Walsh signings did, so we think we can all agree on that.
Well, yeah, he certainly has proved to be better value for money than, you know, wingers who followed, like Bolasie, isn't he?
Certainly, I don't care about value for money, he's certainly better than Sandro as well.
Yeah.
I mean, as you say, another Barca B teammate of his from back in those days.
Yeah, I mean, just the key is don't give them 100 and 125, 20 grand a week, because it's just, you can't get rid of them if it doesn't pan out.
It's a nuisance, and I mean, that is literally the legacy of Steve Walsh now, is like these crap players that we can't shift. But on the note of legacies, before we finish, what's Gerard Delafeu's legacy at Everton?
Well thought of, but came at the wrong time in his career and in Everton's history. A good player at the wrong time.
Definitely the wrong time, and I'd also say maybe misused as well. I think, like you say, I think either preferred him up top or maybe even cutting in off the left. I think
if we either never had him and Watford went down, we'd be all over him. Every fan would be like, we've got to get him. The only reason that it's only sort of half spoken about now is because we've had two stints with him, and you know, people have got like, oh, well, you know, we weren't very good at that time. I think if we were to get him, and he went into part of our forwards rather than our wingers, I think he'd be a quality addition. But
absolutely.
But right now he'd cost too much money, and we've had it. You know, you can't spend big money on a player you've recently let go before. It would just stick in your throat.
It's like United with Pogba, isn't it? It's just,
yeah.
But also, I think the fact that, like you say, I think we've got other positions in our team that needs addressing. Mm. I don't think that's ever going to be a goer. Certainly not this summer.
Oh no, it's time. You know, he's on good terms with Everton fans as well. He always gets a good reception when he comes back. I think he would crawl back to Everton, by the way. You can tell he's always a bit like, he wishes it worked out at Everton, because when he comes back, he's like more affectionate with our fans than he is with the Watford fans. I think if we came in for him, he'd be throwing transfer requests down and everything.
Yeah, I mean, that's all another reason for Watford fans to throw snakes at us, but
be worth it just for that.
Yeah, well, there you go. Well, that's for another day. But there you have it. Gerard Delafeu still has a positive legacy at Everton.